You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Since 2008, environmentalists and civil society groups have been sounding the alarm about the purchase of vast tracts of land in poor countries. The sales are taking place at breakneck speed, fueled by a soaring demand for agricultural land by wealthier countries. Since last year, almost 200 land deals have been recorded, while reports of new acquisitions continue to surface all the time. Shepherd Daniel is author of a report on this phenomenon, produced by the Oakland Institute, and she joins me today from Santiago, Chile. Hello, Shepherd.
Hi, thank you.
In your report, you call these deals land grabs. Why do you use that term?
It is a term that refers to the purchase or the long-term leasing of agricultural lands in developing countries. And because these purchases have the potential to jeopardize local populations, the term land grab kind of recalls the process that happened historically in colonial times, in which land was taken up and appropriated in a way that jeopardized these local populations and local livelihoods.
Can you elaborate a little on what's driving the rush to buy up land?
Sure. There are several drivers that we highlight in our report. It's a very complex mix of factors, but there's three patterns of trends. First of all, the state of global food security. Many countries are facing land and water restraints, such as the Gulf states, or population problems, such as Asian states, such as China, and they're just worried about meeting food security demands in coming years. And so they are buying up land in developing countries to try to ensure long-term food security. However, other drivers that are not as often indicated in the media coverage are simply the fact that right now investments in soft commodities are a very profitable investment. In past years, investments in hard commodities such as non-renewable goods, metals, and fossil fuels were the prime performers in commodity markets. But in recent years, we've seen a shift to soft commodities, which are renewable resources, food crops, which are currently performing very well in commodity markets. So you see any smart investment company these days wanting to acquire agricultural land and invest in it in an attempt to turn a profit. And then you see a third driver, which is simply the fact that demands for biofuels and other agri-fuels, which can be produced from ethanol or sugarcane, or palm oil, this growing demand is very important for investors as well. They're looking to acquire land and raw materials, access to these raw materials, to produce agri-fuels in this surging market.
Who are the buyers?
The buyers are often rich countries in the Middle East who do not necessarily have a problem with buying food supplies, but as we saw last year with the 2008 food crisis, these countries are worried about export restrictions from countries that produce agricultural crops. For example, as the price of food went up, developing countries were worried about meeting local food needs, and therefore they imposed export restrictions in exporting these foods to other countries. You also have rich countries, donor countries, G8 and OECD countries who are supporting this investment as well.
And where is the majority? Where is this land being bought up?
The majority of the land is being bought up in Africa, sub-Saharan African states, for example, but also we've seen a recent switch to land being bought up also in Southeast Asia and in South American countries, such as Brazil and Argentina.
Okay, and how do they go about buying up this land? Is there some sort of middleman, or what's the process?
Well, oftentimes you hear in the media coverage that one country is negotiating with another country, such as the United Arab Emirates is negotiating with Pakistan, when really what's happening is a private investment company from the United Arab Emirates is negotiating with the government of Pakistan. So that's one thing that we highlighted in our article, was that the majority of these land acquisitions are in the hands of private companies as opposed to governments. And this could be dangerous in the sense that the interests of private companies are first and foremost turning a profit, not food security on the ground for local populations.
And what does this mean for local populations? Can you sort of give us an idea of how they end up as a result of these acquisitions?
Sure. The truth is there's not a lot of evidence of what's happening on the ground right now with local populations, but historical evidence of foreign corporations going into developing countries and establishing plantation-style agriculture shows that the claimed benefits for local populations, such as technology transfers or improved infrastructure, these benefits do not always materialize. And what's happening currently is the land that is being allotted for foreign purchase by developing country governments is often farmed by smallholders. There are 1.5 billion smallholder farmers in the world who farm an average of 2 hectares of land or less. And oftentimes these smallholders do not have formal rights over the land that they farm. Normally they have informal relationships with the government or traditional rights to farming this land. And so when the land is allotted to foreign investors, they lose access to their land and, of course, access to their livelihood and their food security. So this can displace these farmers or completely jeopardize their entire way of living.
I just want to move to a concrete sort of example of how this plays out. In the report, you say that the second largest deal to date was signed between a U.S. investor and a Sudanese warlord. What can you tell us about that deal?
This deal with Philippe Hailberg, this is just one of the examples of an investor looking to turn a profit in a commodity sector that has suddenly started to perform very well in the last few years. And he just has bought up millions of acres, which is very scary in light of the conflict in Sudan right now that's been going on for several years. These people in Sudan who are small farmers, many of them have been displaced from their land. They're already refugees, are already dealing with lack of access to their basic needs, food and water. And now you have an American investor coming in and taking over a huge portion of southern Sudan, hoping to turn a profit by exporting crops. And his interests are most likely gaining profits as opposed to what's important to these people on the ground. And so in light of this politically unstable situation, this is a very dangerous and irresponsible investment, in my opinion.
Moving to some of the international institutions, does the World Bank have any involvement in these deals?
It does, in the sense that the International Financial Corporation, which is part of the World Bank Group, which is the World Bank's private sector branch, they work to promote and to finance private investments in the developing world in general. And lately they've been promoting a huge number of investments in the agricultural sector of developing countries. And so what they do is they come in, they work with developing country governments to cut down the red tape and the barriers to foreign direct investment in those countries, to make it easier for private investment, private investors to come in and to hopefully expand the private sector in that country. And this is a systematic way of taking land that is probably informally owned or farmed by these smallholders and putting it into the hands of private investors. And the problem here is that the International Financial Corporation seems to promote this model that foreign direct investment is good, period, and that foreign investment in agriculture is going to be good, period. But what the report highlights is that this is dangerous because private sector expansion in the agri-industry can be good to the extent that it doesn't jeopardize small farmers or local livelihoods or food security on the ground. And when you have groups like the International Financial Corporation coming in and providing money and providing technology, it's often going to agribusinesses in these countries as opposed to smallholder farmers and developing small-scale agriculture, which is where you have problems of hunger, where you have problems of access to basic food, basic needs, and just the land that these people need to subsist.
So you described the IFC, the International Financial Corporation, as the private sector arm of the World Bank. And you say they come in and they cut out some of the red tape. How do they go about doing that? What kind of pressures do they put on these governments?
Not so much pressures, but they just work with them to try to, for example, decrease taxes on foreign investors, or they work to try to change land laws to increase the amount of land that foreign investors are allowed to own within that country. And this has caused a lot of problems with local populations. We highlight Pakistan, for example. Pakistani small farmers for years have been advocating and vying for land reform and having increased access to land to produce food for their families. And then you have the Pakistani government working with the IFC to increase ways to get this land into the hands of foreign investors. And so that's going to create social and political tension there.
And why are these governments working with the IFC? Why are they not protecting their own farmers?
That's a really good question, and it's a huge problem throughout the developing world with political elites looking out for their own benefits. And it's just a question of where they're going to earn more money. And certainly it is attractive for these host countries, these developing countries, to attract investments that they suppose will improve their infrastructure and increase technology transfers to their countries. And there are certainly claims that this will improve employment. But when you look at historical evidence, these things do not always materialize, and there's just little certainty that these benefits will actually spill over to the domestic population.
And what happens to land reform in places like Pakistan when these kind of deals are happening?
There's really no evidence of what will happen in terms of land reform, because a few of these deals, the consequences of them are yet to be seen. However, historically, for decades, Pakistan and the Philippines and Cambodia, for example, have all been vying for land reform, and the land reform deals that have been proposed were either unsuccessful or the governments have not been able to put together the type of legislation necessary to impose the land reform that's needed. And so these have been long struggles that people have been working for years, and it's just very disappointing that this trend of land grabbing is most likely going to take those efforts and push them in the opposite direction.
Now, it seems rather incredible that the food insecurity or food needs of some of the wealthier countries in the world is taking away some of the food security from some of the poorer countries like Sudan or Pakistan.
I think it is incredible. I think it just shows that we really need to invest in our natural capital and our food resources, and that at the end of the day, money from other resources such as oil, in the case of the Middle East, are not going to ensure food security or the basic needs for your citizens.
And what could slow down these land grabs, Shepherd?
Well, I think the international community is just trying to find a way to respond in a coordinated manner. These deals have been happening so quickly that institutions such as the FAO and other UN agencies are just struggling to get together some sort of code of conduct that's going to promote responsible investment, transparent interactions when it comes to negotiating these deals. And fortunately, the World Summit on Food Security, which is this week, the 16th of November through the 18th, is certainly going to discuss this issue. The FAO last week released an issue paper discussing the dangers of these land acquisitions, and I have faith that hopefully some sort of positive response will come out of the World Summit this week.
All right, Shepherd, thanks very much for taking the time to discuss this with us today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Shepherd Daniel is author with Anuradha Mittal of The Great Land Grab, Rush for World's Farmland Threatens Food Security for the Poor. It's produced by the Oakland Institute in California.